Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
What's up, everybody? I am here, and I am finally talking about Australian Survivor. It has been something people have been asking the specialist to cover for, 8 years since Australian Survivor got rebooted. And finally, I decided, you know what? Let's jump in. Let's dive in. Let's start taking a look at it. So, for now, I'm going to be putting out every Friday, there will be an Australian Survivor podcast for our $10 and $20 tier patrons. Putting this episode out first, you can all kind of get an understanding on YouTube of whether or not you even be interested in listening to this. I figure this will be good off-season material. This will get us through. By the time we get to another live season of Australian Survivor, I'll be looking to put that regular free on the YouTube channel, the same way we put all of our other Survivor content on the YouTube channel. Survivor Australia versus the US really sped this up and made this more urgent and made it seem like, okay, it's time to finally jump in so I can know what I'm talking about, because the US contestants, I have to assume, are going to be some pretty massive names considering Sandra and Russell have already played Australian Survivor. So I wanted to make sure we jumped in. I started watching. I got all of the seasons under my belt. Before then, pretty much what I'm looking to do is 6-ish episodes per episode that I put out on the Patreon. This first episode is only going to cover episodes 1 through 5 of the first season. I feel like after watching episode number 5, there was really no way to justify doing one more episode. That was a great ending point and a great differentiator, whatever the hell the word is for that, between US Survivor and Australian Survivor. So with that first massive major twist, I figured, you know what, let me stop here, get this first episode out, and do this. Pretty much what that means, though, is about 4 to 5 episodes per season. That seems like what it's going to be. I think, there's 8 seasons. I've been trying not to look stuff up. I know who wins this season of Australian Survivor because Adam Klein talked about it so much back during, this was around when he was playing, so he talked about it a lot. So I know who wins this episode, this season. I don't know who wins anything else. I don't even know the names of the people who are on seasons. I really don't. I've paid so little attention to Australian Survivor, so I do feel like I'm jumping in blind to this. I knew who Nick Iadanza was because I know he does the RHAP podcast, and I know he follows us on social media and stuff, so I know that he's been a little bit more involved in the community and stuff. But aside from that, all I know is who wins this season. I'm trying not to look up the boot order, anything like that. So if you're sitting here going, Phil, we already know this, whatever, this is simply, you can rewatch alongside me. You can finally start to hear some takes. I'll try to give my thoughts about what I feel about Australian Survivor versus US Survivor. And additionally, what players I'm really enjoying, which ones I feel like are really good casting choices. Obviously, with 24 people on this first season of Australian Survivor, there's a lot going on, a lot of people eating up screen time, some people getting no screen time. So it's kind of fun to dive in, see the differences, talk about it, break it all down, and ultimately see if I can even predict who's going to be on these future seasons of Survivor, because I know they do a couple returning player seasons already. I have no idea who the fan favorites are, so I'm playing along. And if you're a patron and you're going to keep continuing to follow the series throughout, this is my initial journey, and I'm all in on comments and everything. Please don't spoil if you can avoid it. Ultimately, at the end of the day, if I look something up, I'm probably going to get spoiled on at least something, but I'm trying to avoid it. So if you can avoid spoiling, that would be great. But if you want to give some insights into how people felt about it, how you felt about it, certain moves, certain players, certain boots, all of that stuff, let me know. Because I'm also into the dun-dun-dun, which by that I mean episode 5 ends with two tribe members going to different tribes. And if you want to say, yeah, this really ruins the season, ... I consider that a dun-dun-dun, you know, where it's, uh-oh, what's going to happen next? And that's fine with me. Don't tell me how it ends up shaking out for Nick, Tegan, Sam, and Connor. But, you know, I'm fine with you throwing in your opinions of, I hated this twist, I love this twist, all of that stuff. So that's what this is going to be. I'm going to go through every single season except for those first two. I'm going from the reboot on, and I'll be talking about everything. And like I said, probably what's going to end up happening is eventually Australian Survivor is going to be back on, and I'm not going to be done with this series yet, but I'm going to continue to put it out every Friday. So make sure you keep tuning in. And like I said, $10 and $20 patrons. So two of the three tiers that we have available will be getting this every Friday, in addition to all the other stuff we put there. So check out patreon.com/thespecialist, see what you might like, see if there's anything that intrigues you, and that's it. All right. I'm going to start off with this twist. I probably should start with episode 1, but this twist was the first time that I really felt like, okay, this is different. When I watched the first 4 episodes of the show, it felt like it was Survivor. And people really do hype Australian Survivor in such a huge way. And then what they always justify this as is, well, this is the worst season of the reboot. Okay, that's fine. I'm enjoying it because I like Survivor. I enjoy pretty much every season of Survivor, even the ones that I have ranked really, really low. And so I like this. But, you know, does it feel groundbreaking? Not really. 24 people, 55 days. Like, I get that. Even with the longer episodes, they do struggle to get everybody involved. And one thing I'm noticing, because as I'm watching this season, I'm actually watching Survivor Fiji, and my wife and I just watched Survivor Cook Islands. Survivor, the US version, really struggled to figure out how they were going to edit 20 people. Really had a hard time figuring out how they were going to do that. That's why Cook Islands and Fiji have two of the worst edited seasons in terms of players just really high up, really low, really high, really low. Short confessional counts for a lot of people. And I feel like Australian Survivor, despite having a longer amount of time for most of their episodes, still struggles to figure out what to do with 24 people. And how that relates to this twist is, I know 3 of the 4 people involved in this twist pretty well. Tegan, I really couldn't tell you a single thing about her. And maybe it's because she gets swap screwed, and that's what they're trying to set up and say, okay, like, you know, no big deal. But overall, this twist, it feels like it can only work in Australian Survivor, and I hope that they don't ever bring this to US Survivor. I don't really like this twist. I don't mind twists, you know, in Cook Islands, they kidnap Nate and then Nate goes back to his tribe. Afterwards, he participates in one challenge, but they actually sit him out, obviously, because he's not going to try to win considering he's leaving. But the idea of the two tribes going to tribal council together and not voting together, I actually thought was kind of funny. I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm not opposed to that idea. It was fun to watch Sanapu, the blue tribe, just totally spill their beans about everything that was going on inside of their tribe, all of the inner workings, all of their secrets, all that. And Vavao just laughing their asses off because they can't believe that they're getting this much information out of who is supposed to be their opponent. And I find that to be quite fascinating. And then they do the vote, and I don't necessarily mind if you just vote somebody out there. The switching tribes thing, we'll have to see how I feel. It definitely worked out for Australian Survivor in this situation because Nick is definitely one of the stars of the early game here. And then Connor could then volunteer to go over. And clearly things were starting to go south for Connor on Sanapu. Then they get to pick somebody. Nick picks Tegan, which is no surprise. Maybe to try to protect Tegan, but I do feel like going over to the Sanapu tribe, they're pretty tight. Connor takes Sam. That one did kind of surprise me a little bit. I thought he would have taken Kylie, considering Kylie with the idol, and Kylie, you know, was really going to bat for him. I swore, I'll never do this. I'll never write his name down. And then he just volunteers to go to the other tribe. Maybe he didn't want to do that because she did have the idol. So he thinks that makes him an easy target, especially if you start to play the numbers out. There's only 2 of you. There's 6 of Vavao. So that could make it where it's a 3-3-2 split, and then whoever doesn't have the idol goes home, and that could be him. So maybe he was thinking along those lines. I don't know. As a twist, it just there's pros and there's cons. I feel like the pro is you get this situation where two players who are really, really strong would have gone home, and you get to keep them around. The con is for the people who, I mean, I guess really the thing is it fair? Because people who are voted out go to a different tribe, and it's okay, you still have life in this game, you're just on a different tribe, which you're going to be outnumbered, but hey, you should be out. So I'm not saying, is it fair to them? I guess what I'm saying, is it fair to the other people who just voted them out of the game, thinking that they were voting somebody out of the game? And Jonathan actually does say a couple times throughout this episode, you know, two people will be voted out tonight. Now, technically, they're voted out of the tribe. They're not voted out of the game. So he's not lying to them in the way Jeff lied to the people in season 41. But it still feels like a little bit of a cop-out. But I guess when you have 55 days, 26 episodes, 24 people, you got to get creative with it. Because there's 26 episodes and there's 24 people. There's not enough episodes to vote somebody out every single time. So this was the first instance of an episode of Survivor planning to not vote anybody out. They wanted to end this episode with nobody going home. Does it leave a lot of questions for me? Absolutely. I thought this was the best place to stop, because now I get to really, I think the game really starts to take shape now. And especially coming off the dud Peter quit episode, I think this is good. The problem is, because it is coming off of the dud quit Peter episode, we now have two episodes back to back where nobody gets voted off. And so you're five episodes into a season, you've seen three people get voted off instead of five. You've now had two episodes where there's been tribal council and no one's gone home. And yes, they have that wiggle room and stuff, but it really does make me appreciate how US Survivor will work a lot of times, where they won't even have them go to tribal council. Like, if you go to tribal council, you're pretty much always voting somebody off. Obviously in Samoa, they had the really epic tribal council where they all came together after the Russell Swan medevac. I mean, that moment is absolutely incredible. I love that scene so much, and that really worked, but it's so few and far between. And it does feel like this was a way that Australian Survivor was trying to differentiate itself from the US version. What was it going to do that the US version hadn't done? You know, Jonathan can say, he doesn't say you want to know what you're playing for. I forget exactly what he says, but you know, I'm starting to get the hang of his lines. He's not going to go tally the votes. He's going to go count the votes, or he's going to read the votes, or whatever he says. Those little changes, those aren't changes that anybody who's watching really cares about. Yeah, sure, it feels off if you've been a US Survivor fan your entire life and you've been watching since you were a child. It's going to feel like, wait, that doesn't sound exactly right. But that's not big enough. So what can you do that's different? And 24 players, I also don't think is big enough. And 55 days, I also don't think is big enough. I know a lot of people always talk about with 26 versus 39 days in US Survivor. 39 days is definitely better because it allows you more time of, I think people, you start to realize it now when they're doing the split right after the merge, and then they bring them back together and then they split and all that. You realize a lot of these players just don't have time to get together. And, you know, between one tribal council and the other, there might be 12 hours or there's 24 hours. So they only have 8 hours of maybe being awake. And four of those might be spent at a challenge. Like, there's really not much time in between. You got the nighttime after tribal into the morning. That knocks out 8 hours, and you're not going to do much strategizing there. And then you got to come and do confessionals and all of that stuff. There's a lot going on behind the scenes that makes that feel quick. 55 days with this many players, it seems like it's moving at a better tick, because we are seeing more tribals and you know, they're going on different days, and they're going to have to be creative. But the 55 days isn't enough for an audience. This type of twist is the type of thing that they have to do. I don't know if they do this again. Like I said, I literally know nothing else about Australian Survivor. I know McKenna and Alexa, back during COVID, they actually watched the next season of Australian Survivor, season 4, season 2 of the reboot. What am I supposed to call this? Somebody at least comment that. Can I call this Australian Survivor season 1, or do I have to call it season 3? But they had done that episode or that season, and I don't know anything about that season. Still don't know anything about that season. So I'm trying to stay in the dark on it. I will give Australian Survivor props for taking a risk like this, though. I mean, this is a massive, massive, massive risk. You have to get the right players involved, and that worked out for them. Like I said, that it was Connor and Nick. Nick, especially being blindsided, so pumped to get away from them. I'm excited to see how Nick's storyline will shake out throughout the rest of the season. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, all is fair, right? All is fair in Survivor. And I just feel like this was one instance of, as a twist, shocking, definitely. Maybe a little short-sighted. And that's how I felt about the Malcolm twist back in Game Changers, where the two tribes went the tribal together. Shocking, massive moment, short-sighted, because then you lose Malcolm. And that's one of the most exciting episodes of the entire, or he's one of the most exciting players of that era. And that's the last time we've seen Malcolm. And that is a frustrating way to see him go out. It would have been nice if he could have stuck around longer. So while it was a great moment, ultimately it hurts the season, in my opinion. And this one, I don't know how that's going to shake out. But you got to take some chances because you do have to differentiate yourself. You can't just do the same things. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about that twist. I feel like it's a solid twist that could have problems that I'm kind of whatever on. But because it saved Nick and because it saved Connor, I'm actually way better about it. And I do like that, especially for like Vival. Barry seemed like such an obvious boot here. And they still were playing hard. And I feel like that's the one thing I can say about this cast early on. And maybe it's the Australian Survivor like mentality with more players and stuff. It feels like with having eight people on each tribe to start, there's more room for people to really wiggle. And maybe that's something that US Survivor could learn from. Eight players to start on each tribe allows the dynamics to go up and down, up and down, up and down over time. Because people can sit in the middle and say, oh, I'm gonna flip over here. Maybe today I'm feeling this. Maybe today I'm feeling this. And I think that's really, really good for the show. Six people, it feels like there's nowhere to hide. And then you vote 5-1, one person goes. And now it's, okay, what's going to happen with the 3-2 here? I think a 4-4, this is why it was fun in the early seasons, like in Africa, when you have Lindsay versus Carl. I mean, you get these tribe splits and there's a little bit more room to wiggle. And I think in the newer era, people are going to be more willing to flip flop back and forth, even in the pre-merge phase. So I do definitely like the larger starting tribes because I think that that created more drama. I did not think it was going to be Nick who was going to get the votes here. I did not. And maybe that's the edit, knowing that he's going to continue on and play much further into the game. And he didn't actually go home. So maybe that's why I got to see, that's why it didn't feel like he was going to go home, because he technically doesn't. But I was shocked that his name was the one that came up. On the other side, Connor versus Flick, I wasn't really too surprised. That kind of shook out the way I pretty much expected it to. So I do think it's interesting that with the tie vote comes in this situation. So when the tie vote comes in this situation, what's very fascinating about that to me is they now, like, the twist was supposed to be the shocker, right? Of you voted, you didn't vote somebody out, they're just going to go to a different tribe. And then afterwards, because it's a tie, they now know the twist and they go and vote again. And does that change the way people voted? Again, I didn't go and look because I'm trying to avoid the spoilers. I think Matt changed his vote though. So, anyway, yeah, that's just how I feel about all of that. I'm going to go back to day one real quick. I'm going to go back to episode one. I'm going to take a look. Sam absolutely beasted that first challenge. That's definitely a way to get on people's good sides and make people like you. Dez was the most obvious first boot in the history of Survivor. In the history of Survivor. I mean, that man had no idea what was going on. No idea how to play the game. That was like a Chicken level performance, but even Chicken had more upside because Chicken was on a tribe that probably could have used him a little bit more. The way it was edited too made Dez really obvious. And this was something I was thinking about. So far, the vote outs in terms of Dez, Bianca, Evan, those are the three people who have actually been voted out that I've seen. Bianca was a little surprising to me because of how she played in the first episode and how she was played up in the first episode. I like the whole thing of her being a private investigator, but lying and telling people she's in insurance and all that. But then when the second episode comes around, they start to telegraph it. And part of me wonders, is that the downside of longer episodes? But then I started thinking, well, what as a Survivor community do we really want? Do you want to totally understand why a vote happened and thus it's predictable? Or would you rather be left in the dark and be blindsided and then go and say, well, why the hell did this vote happen? And that's a really weird catch 22 that Australian Survivor and US Survivor find themselves in. So many times, I mean, that, you know, when Will and I jump on this podcast, when Alexa and I, Blake and I, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. You find yourself saying, I don't understand why this person voted for this person. I don't get it. I don't understand. I wish I had a better understanding of why they did this. But then that's also what creates the blind side. Because if you had the confessional of somebody going up there and saying, well, I'm voting for Tiffany because, well, then the blind side's gone for the audience, and the audience wants to be blindsided. That's part of the fun. But people are still going to complain because they wish they had a better understanding of it. And then when you get an obvious boot where it is telegraphed, Jess, for instance, from season 46, it was a very obvious boot, Banu's, which obviously was an outlier because it went over the course of two episodes, but still, you understand what I'm saying. That's also something people will complain about. So what is the preference? Because realistically, if you're telling a story, it should be totally understood what's going on at the end of the story. Yeah, you want to have some open-endedness. There's a reason why movies and books throughout time have stood the test of time, because they have more open-ended endings, or at least you can have a discussion about it. But you feel that you understand how you got to that point. And I do think Australian Survivor is doing a really good job of making me understand why each particular person is going home. Dez, unbelievably obvious why he was going home. Where was this? I had the Bianca was a missed opportunity. That's how I felt about her with her going home. But it wasn't surprising that they go to vote out Bianca, because Bianca starts to overplay a little bit. And that's fine. She thinks Flick and Brooke are too tight. And that's fine that she starts to feel like they're overplaying. And then we start to get the understanding that she's going home. But that could have been a really huge moment of blindside for the audience. And they chose not to blindside the audience. And I think I like that more in this instance, because I really understood why Bianca went home. Same thing with episode 3. Evan starts off super hot in that episode. You know, this is the episode where they go down and they have the idol twist, where two people, who's your most trustworthy, and then they get to pick somebody. And we have Phoebe and Rohan go down there, and Rohan puts the thing in the front of his pants and it falls out. And Evan doesn't believe their story, so he runs down and he gets it. And then he starts calling everybody out on it, and Rohan plays it perfectly. I don't know if Rohan was serious or lying, but when he comes back and he says, I was waiting to tell you. This is on you, man. Like, you just blew me up in front of everybody. Now I understand why Evan goes home. And so I guess what I'm saying is I've understood it all. And some people might find that to be boring Survivor. I know a lot of people complained about the end of season 45 because it felt like it was too predictable with the Rebas running through. But we understood every vote. And then the one that people probably enjoyed the most was when Dee somehow survives and Julie goes home at final five, right? Where it's that crazy, crazy, all the vote split and whatever, and Katara goes the way she shouldn't have gone. That's one that we don't all understand, and yet I think it created a better conversation. I think that was the one that maybe people enjoyed more as an episode. So I do wonder if, like, do the longer episodes, as we've seen in 45 and 46, and now watching through Australian Survivor, do they actually make it so that it's a little bit predictable? Because they have more time to explain every single thing that is going on in the story. Because through an hour and a half, an hour and 20 minutes, like the premiere is, and all, like, you know, all of these episodes so far have been at least 55 minutes long, you should be able to tell me exactly why somebody's going home and where they messed up, and I should be able to watch that. And so far, Australian Survivor's done that. Even when they had opportunities to be like, oh, Bianca, wow, this could be a huge blindside. Let's choose not to do that, and let's make it more obvious for the sake of telling the story. And I'm fine with that. I am fine with that. Although I will say, as knowing who wins this season, they do a very good job of hiding that person. They do a great job. In case you're watching along with me for this first time, I don't want to say who it is, but they're doing a very good job of hiding the person who ultimately goes on to win. So Aganoa is the tribe that just keeps getting cooked here. What, they lose four of the first five challenges, but then Lee absolutely dominates the episode five challenge. Absolutely dominates that one. That was where they were shooting the the tiki masks down. He does a great job in that one. Unfortunately for them, of course, right? This is what always ends up happening with these bad luck tribes, is when they win, it's always there's no point. Or they win and there's some twist that keeps people alive. And so they win, but now all that did was change up the other tribes, and Aganoa stays the same. And who's to say Sinapu or Vavau got weaker? I don't know. But, you know, I think Vavau actually probably got stronger because now they have Sam, who seemed like he was by far the strongest member over on Sinapu. So anyway, that's just how I feel about that. You know, they finally win one, but they've been a disaster. You know, the women have dominated, air quotes, that tribe. But then we also find out at the tribal council, where they don't have to vote anybody off, that the women were going to vote Kat off. Phoebe, Christy, Elle, we're all going to vote Kat out of the game, even though Kat thought it was a strong four women alliance, because Rohan and Lee at this point are kind of needed over there on that tribe. And Kat was just being viewed as the weakest, even though they keep putting her on the puzzle and she keeps saying she doesn't want to do the puzzle. But, you know, Dez, yeah, he was never going to work out. Evan seemed like more of a strategic guy. Those seemed like two easy boots, and I feel like it gave this false sense of there's going to be a women's alliance when there really is none. I do enjoy watching Aganoa, though. I think, like, them as an underdog tribe is definitely fun, and Phoebe plays hard. Rohan definitely feels like the second in command to Phoebe, but Phoebe has a mind for the game, and I think that's been a lot of fun to watch, too. That's pretty much where I feel like that is with that tribe. Sinapu, the other tribe that has gone to tribal council, they vote off Bianca, and then Peter quits. I mean, I was confused why they all liked Peter so much. Like, I understand that he's probably a good guy, but it confused me why they liked him so much that they were just going to keep him around, you know, cut off your nose, spite your face. Like, it doesn't make sense. You're going to keep him around, and he keeps wanting to quit. And even at the one immunity challenge, he says, I'm going to sit out. If I don't sit out, you guys are going to win anyway, or aren't going to win anyway, or something like that. And he says, I'll explain it later. It's very clear that he's going to quit. The game just wasn't for him, and that's fine, I guess. But, you know, especially this was back in like 2016. This is the first time that Australian Survivor's back, so I have a little bit more understanding for him, especially longer days, everything like that. I guess I could understand this more than quitting during season 45, but, you know, that's just me. Still, it's a dud. It's a bummer, all of that. When I watched this tribe, this was where Peter actually was the one with the clue, and he picked Kylie because he felt Kylie was on the outs and he wanted to help Kylie get better fit into the game. And so they go out, they do deceit, they get the idol clue, and Kylie does end up finding the idol, and then she wears it to the double tribal council, which, again, it's just so funny to watch Sinapu just be a total mess. But I kind of think it's funny that a guy who's trying to quit, his tribe still picks him to be the one who goes and does this trustworthy challenge task thing. Why would you do that? And then they even realize, wow, that was the stupidest thing we've done, because these are the two people who are willing to work together. And while Peter was still trying to quit, like, you got to make sure that anybody but him is going. Why give the information to a guy who is that, you know, uninterested in playing the game? I do like the Flick and Brooke alliance. I think it's entertaining for sure. Sam definitely feels like the leader there. Obviously, him and Connor have now booked it. They did a good job of casting the you know, Survivor fan archetype on this season with Nick and Connor, and even Evan, who's already gone. I feel like those are good casting choices for sure. And then Matt's been surprisingly fun too. So there's a lot of talent on the Sinapu tribe, like a lot of good screen people, but they all took a little bit to get going. We'll see how that ends up going now that they have Nick and Tegan. I feel like those four, though, would probably stick strong. Kylie feels like the outcast there, but since Kylie has the idol, I feel like Matt, Brooke, Flick, they would absolutely just vote off Nick or Tegan. I feel like Nick and Tegan just walked into a really bad situation. And then Vavau, the team that's just dominating. I do really enjoy Craig. I think Craig's probably my favorite person on that tribe. Nick was, but I think Craig is now my favorite now that Nick's gone. Barry really is not on this season. I feel like he's barely there at all. Andrew, I feel like, is a villain in the wait. He's just waiting for it to happen. obviously now they have Connor and Sam, so that'll change some things and maybe that'll get them voted out. But I do feel like of all the tribes, Vavao is the one I know the least. Kate's backstory is insane though. The and that's what I guess I appreciate about the longer episodes and stuff is that they found time to tell that entire backstory. That backstory of her like breaking all those parts of her body and almost never being able to walk again and the 10-day coma and all that. I mean, I thought that was absolutely incredible. So that definitely makes you want to root for her a little bit more. Jenna, I don't feel like I know it all. Sue, kind of like don't really know her either. And then Tegan, like I said, I don't know it all. So that's kind of how I feel about the cast. What's funny is everybody talks about longer episodes. They do such a better job of getting all of the cast involved. I feel like it's very similar. The people who go home, they get their screen time and then they go home, or they get ignored until their episode where they go home. And I feel like you have your stars and you have your people who are B or C characters. And I feel like that's been the case for most of this season. I do feel like Tegan, Christy, who's the other one? Tegan, Christy, and Sue are probably the ones I know the least about. And even Andrew, I don't feel like I know that well yet. So yeah, that's kind of where I feel from the casting perspective of everything. From a challenge perspective, I do enjoy the more physical challenges. Now, what I have to remind myself of is that Australian Survivor this season took place in 2016. So back during that time of Survivor, this is the same time when Caleb is passing out, almost dying. I mean, it's around that same era. So they were still doing very physical challenges on Survivor. It is just fun, though, sometimes to watch these not end with a puzzle, not end with anything like that. I like the beginning of the season where they're, you know, you can go out, get your supplies, but then somebody has to get out to the torch. First one to get to the torch gets fire for their tribe. Who's going to do that? How are you going to divvy this up? How are you going to figure it out? I thought that was a really fun twist. Sam obviously dominated that. But like, I really liked the rope challenge where they have to carry their tribe member through the ropes up over across the top of stuff. I thought that was a really, really fun challenge to do. I'm a huge fan of them doing the, you know, the stick your logs and stuff through the other tribe's area so that they can't figure out how to get through. I always like that challenge. That's a classic Survivor challenge that they've kind of gotten rid of now, which is unfortunate because that used to be fun to watch them just like do it and tie everything up and see what they could get. So it is a bummer that they got rid of that one. And, you know, the challenges aren't groundbreaking by any means, but I feel like they're having a little bit of fun with them. They feel more like old school challenges than new school challenges, which I'm into. And maybe that's just also like the art design on this, right? Like the art design for this show feels much cruder than it does for US Survivor, especially nowadays. Like US Survivor has their stuff very set and, you know, everything's very clear lines and very nicely cut. And I feel like Australian Survivor, some of this kind of does give like a Borneo vibe of, man, that stick is way different looking than that stick. That's pretty much where I'm at with these first five episodes of Australian Survivor. Definitely enjoying players like Nick, Connor, Phoebe the most. Rohan's a good side character, but I feel like he's a side character. I'm very curious to see how the winner ends up winning this. I'm very curious to see how this ends up shaking out. And this twist, where is that going to go? And that's why I wanted to make sure I talked about this before I actually figured out how the twist was going to shake out. Because I feel like then that suddenly becomes a much less interesting conversation because I'll already have the info and people are going to say, Phil, you already know. So what difference does it make? So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you enjoyed listening to me talk a little bit about Australian Survivor. And obviously, as I go through, I'll be able to pull from previous things that happened in Australian Survivor and more. This was really me just getting accustomed to it, getting used to the new show, getting used to the length, which I will say, thank God for 1.25 times speed, because I don't know if I could watch all of these. My goal is to get ahead so that I can start watching them at normal speed. But right now, the whole 1.25 times speed has been a lifesaver to get me through. It also makes the intro song pretty crazy. Makes it very funny. It turns into like a disco thing. So if you've never listened to the intro song at 1.25 times speed, you should check that out and see what you think about it. But that's what I got. That's what I got. If you enjoyed this, please like this video. Please subscribe to our channel. We have so much other stuff going on over on Patreon. So make sure you go over and you check out what we have going on over there. $5 tier, $10 tier, $20 tier, $5 tier, you get into the Discord, you get our Q&A, you get, our movie, $5 Tuesdays, every Tuesday. Next tier up, you get your casting, Survivor Rock Draw, and everything from the $5 tier. And then at the top tier, you're getting our Every Season Matters, which we're about to jump into Pearl Islands. We're finishing up Amazon this week, jumping into Pearl Islands. And then you're also getting, obviously, Australian Survivor will be for the top two tiers. So you have all of that going for you. And then when we get into our season, you'll be able to play in Power Rankings games and all that stuff that's not going on right now. So think about becoming a patron. That's where I'm going to be doing all my Australian Survivor talks. I'll definitely be able to hint at it a little bit more now as we start doing some of our Survivor 50 content and everything like that. Keep an eye out, follow us on social media, get ready for some of the Survivor 50 content that we're going to be having come out. We already are in the works with some guests to start talking about that. Once the Survivor 47 last two people are announced, we are going to do a cast assessment early this year, at least like an initial take. And then we'll do a full cast assessment when the season comes around, but at least give our initial take on what we think of the cast. Once that's official, we do have a tell-all coming out. We're just waiting on final approval, but it is going to be coming out. We've already recorded it, so we will have a tell-all as well. So that's exciting, but that's it. Thank you all so much for listening. Stay tuned for what we have coming this summer. McKenna and Blake are doing Big Brother. They put out their first episode the other day. I'm very proud of them. Will and I, we already did the Traitors cast, so we talked about them. A lot going on, so make sure you stay in tune with what the specialists are doing. And hope you enjoyed this. Hope you Australian Survivor, International Survivor fans had your itch scratched because of me doing this. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.